So, translation. Lord Brahma said that no one, not even himself, Indra, all the members assembled in the sacrificial area, or all the sage, could know how powerful Lord Shiva is. Under the circumstances, who would dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet? Purport. After Lord Brahma advised the demigods to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon, it was suggested how he should be satisfied and how the matter should be placed before him. Brahma also asserted that no one of the conditioned souls, including himself and all the demigods, could know how to satisfy Lord Shiva. But he said, it is known that he is very easily satisfied. So, let us try to satisfy him by falling at his lotus feet. Actually, the position of the subordinate is always to surrender to the Supreme. That is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord asks everyone to give up all kind of concocted occupation and simply surrender to Him. That will protect the conditioned souls from all sinful reaction. Similarly, in the case of Brahma, similarly, in this case, Brahma also suggested that they go and surrender to the lotus feet of Lord Shiva. For since he is very kind and easily satisfied, this action will prove effective. Translation again. Lord Brahma said that no one, not even himself or Indra, all the members assembled in the sacrificial area, or all the sage, could know how powerful Lord Shiva is. Under the circumstance, who will dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet?
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Viti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So today's verse is explaining Lord Brahma is speaking. Lord Brahma said, Who can know how much power Lord Shiva has? Not Indra, not the demigods, not the sage, even not myself can know how powerful Lord Shiva is. So, when we cannot know the power of a person, because the power is just like unlimited, that should be enough for us to be careful to not offend that person. That's what the verse is saying. Knowing how unlimited is the power of Lord Shiva, how was it possible to offend Lord Shiva, to make an offense against him? I like personally very much this chapter with the story of Daksha. There is a little, I think, previously there is a very beautiful moment when Daksha is making a second yagya. He had made the one, when he did not stand up when Lord Shiva came, then some trouble came and he decided, okay, I will make another yagya, but this time I don't invite Shiva, I do it without him. But Sati, the wife of Shiva, was very much eager to go to that yagya. First of all, it was his father doing the yagya, and then she was looking in the sky, so many, how we call that in English, those demigods,
Airplanes.
We say airplanes also for those demigods. Yeah. Okay.
Spaceships.
Spaceships.
Space animals.
So Sati will see all those spaceships on the sky and will see that all the demigods were going to the yagya. She was saying, "Oh, I would like so much to go. They are all going." So she will go to Shiva and say, "Please, please come to the yagya." Shiva said, "Not invited, I don't want to go." And she was like, "Please, please, please." She was insisting. She was so in anxiety, she was going in the house, out of the house, looking at the sky in the house. And she was really eager to go. So Lord Shiva said, "Okay, you can go, but you go alone. I will not come." So usually, women should not be left alone. But Sati wanted so much to go that she just went. So Lord Shiva sent all his friends with Sati, Nandi, the bull, and all those ghostly personality went together with Sati to accompany her to the yagya. And they were all singing music, they were all very, very attentive to please Sati in the journey. Even someone, she was actually on the bull, on Nandi, Nandi was driving her, and someone even give her a mirror so that she could look how she was. And it's very beautifully described. And then when she arrived at the sacrificial arena, her father did not look at her because he was so angry at Lord Shiva. And all the followers of Daksha also did not look at her because they were following Daksha. Only the woman actually came and gave gift to Sati. They understood, oh, they are also rude with her. Let us please her and offer her some gifts. And after that, she became really angry at the behavior of her father, Daksha, and she just decided to leave her body. And she, with some mantra and fire came, and she just left her body. So that's, I just like to say this small passage. I like very much how Shiva would actually not go to the yagya, but take care that Sati was properly accompanied there. Now it looks some fight just happened again. The soldiers of Shiva were winning over all the other priests in the area, and everyone now come to Brahma and say, what to do? Shiva is so angry and he made so much chaos in this sacrificial arena. So Lord Brahma is saying, but why did you offend him when you don't know how powerful is that person? So now he is advising, he said, okay, nobody knows how powerful he is and nobody knows how to please him. The only things we know, he is easily satisfied. So we have some chance. So let's go and try to surrender at his lotus feet. Let's try. Let's see what will happen. Because nobody knows. So, this big fight that happened between Daksha and especially the followers of Daksha and the followers of Lord Shiva, who were actually cursing and cursing back, was really a heavy, heavy time. What was actually the root cause of that problem?
Envy.
Proud envy. Anything else?
Disrespect.
If we try to go more at the root, pride, envy as type of manifestation of one problem.
Egoism.
egoism, we are still not at the root, but I think you have it. False ego. Yeah. False ego. And I would like to speak also a little bit. The lecture will be divided into two parts, and actually they are very, very interrelated. The first will be a little on false ego, and the second one on surrender, because that's actually what is advised here. And by the way, Lord Shiva is the deity in charge of the false ego. He's the deity who can free us from this false identification to the body. And basically, I mean, I'm sure you have heard already many lectures on those points, so I will not speak too long on that. But basically, false ego means I am number one. I am the master. I know better. If you hear yourself sometimes saying that, I know better, you can immediately know you are under false ego. So that's number one. I am the best. That's the characteristic when we are under the false ego. And from there, that's the root. From there, all material desire come. All the subtle material desire for recognition, for pratishta, to be recognized by others, be worshipped by others, also come from this false identification. Because the jiva think, I am this body, so I need recognition. But when the jiva is identified as the true ego, that is really identifying with his true self, he do not need all of those prestige and all of those things. Also the six enemies, like envy, anger, they are all coming through that identification to the body. Now, this false ego is very, very much connected with the person we think we are. And this identification with the body can be described also as upadis, as... How we would translate upadis?
False identification.
Yeah, false identification. That's basically identification to the body, but then identification to who we think we are. Prabhupada will quote so many times this, I am a Russian, I am a German, I am a man, I am a woman. All that are type of identification that strengthen our false identification, our false ego. Once Radhanath Swami and some of his devotee friends, they had a gathering in a hippie festival. And that was the time of the hippies. Nowadays the hippies are not so like before. But at that time when they did the program, they were singing kirtan on the main stage. And many, many people were dancing naked in front of the scene. And after the concert, one devotee announced and invited everyone, you can come and visit us at our temple. And one man said, can we come naked to your temple? And the devotee thought for a while and he said, yes, you have to come naked to our temple. But to come naked doesn't mean to come without your clothes, but it means to come without all the identification you think you are. Good, huh? Good answer. So Radhanath Swami, when he explained that, he said, okay, then after that the hippies just dressed themselves back. They understood actually that's stupid. This they understood about those identification deeper. When I was in India this year, I also had a nice realization about this identification. I was somehow trying to spend a lot of time chanting the holy name. I was in a secluded place. And I was hoping that the Brajbasis would see me as a sadhu. I was thinking, that's my identification now. I'm practicing a lot of sadhana. I'm a sadhu. But I very easily saw how they were making fun of me and how actually Krishna was cutting down that identification. Actually, I was thinking, I want to be free from the identification of being a simple tourist. That was the first step. Let me be as a sadhu. First, that was my attempt. But after some time, I saw how Krishna was just cutting off all those identification. And then I understood I have no other choice. The only identification I can take shelter in is to be a servant. I have no other. And that's a key how to twist that false ego. That false ego is sitting in the throne of our heart and took over control, thinking I and mine. But now we have to make a twist and come into the position of servant to let Krishna sit in the throne of our heart. Yesterday I came to the temple, a devotee came and said, how can I serve you? Can I do something for you? That's how we should. How we can twist that false ego by entering the role, the identity of a servant, because that's the true identity, that's the true ego of the self. For me, this is always saving my life, this remembrance of being in the mood, in the position of a servant. Do you sometimes experience you are speaking with a person and you feel it doesn't connect? You feel like, oh, let me run away. I don't know this person so well. Or sometimes even in the big population with a lot of people. Sometimes, I mean, I'm always traveling in Vaishnava clothes with Maharaj. And sometimes when you are in the airport and you move from here and there, you can feel many people are looking. I can feel many people are looking at me and I feel a little uncomfortable. I'm feeling... And whenever I feel this uncomfortable feeling, if I just come, actually I'm just a servant. Anymore. There is everything of this tension, inner tension, just disappear. All those uncomfortable anxieties or all those things just disappear. I spoke yesterday also with another devotee and I asked him, how is your spiritual life going on now? And he said, I'm really trying to disidentify myself from the body. And it works. Whenever emotions come, or whenever some bad feelings come, I just detach myself. Come in the position of observer. And then everything fade away. Everything is fine again. And this is such a big root. Srila Prabhupada will say that's the beginning. Only when you are in that position as a servant can we practice bhakti. As long as we think as in a term of being a master, there is no way to serve Krishna. That's just a show. Just a show. That's not the real stuff. So it's very nice to be introspective with ourselves and see in which position we are. If we are in the one of the master or the one of the servant. It's also because on our own we don't have much chance. That's very deeply rooted inside of us. But the whole idea of living with Vaishnavas is that actually we help each other to see that. When we see that another devotee is under this false identification, that we help actually each other to wake up. Hey, Prabhu. There is one devotee in Switzerland, whenever I will cross him in the temple, he would say, hey, spirit soul. He will call me spirit soul. And all the time I will remember, oh yeah, actually, I'm part of Krishna, part and parcel of Krishna. And that's actually something we should help each other to come to that level. The pujaris, before entering on the altar, they do what you call Buddha Shuddhi meditation. They meditate, I'm not Brahmana, I'm not Kshatriya. I have nothing to do with those this material body, which is just made of material elements, I have nothing to do with all of that. I'm just a spiritual soul. So there is in our tradition prayers that help us to enter that tuning of being eternal servant. And that's something we really have to work on, because it makes such a big difference at the end. It's almost like night and day. It's like full result and almost no result. When we are in the position of the master, all we are doing is almost no result, because we are not in the proper level. Only when we are in the servant position, there so much result is coming. Therefore, it's a crucial point, and we should not just allow ourselves to be as we are, but we should think, how will I come to that point of being a servant? How will I make it? It should be of interest for us. Some months ago, we were in Bosnia with Satchinandana's family, and every day he would tell me that. Every day he would remind me, hey, Gorali, don't identify so much with your mind and your body. And every day it would come and come and come, and I understood he wants me to make the step. We hear so many informations in our lecture, so many reading, but what are we waiting actually to make, to really take them seriously and really work on it to make them change? I felt so happy yesterday when this devotee said, oh, I'm working on that, I really want to detach myself. I remember also Maharaj gave a lecture in Zagreb once. He was really heavy, and he was really saying, when will you take those information serious? When will you really try? You have heard that so many times, but still you don't take that seriously. When will you take this simple effort, this simple step to enter into the role of the servant? We have a very nice example of a big, big, big person. He was a king. King means Aishwarya Bhav, controlling. That's master. But this king decided to give up his identification and to become just insignificant servant. And this king took a broom and went in front of Jagannath chariot and started to sweep the floor. He gave up all his identification of being a king, but he was just an insignificant servant of Lord Jagannath. I just want to do menial service. And just because of that, King Pratapaudra got so much mercy from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Mahaprabhu saw that this king has given up all this identification and was now doing a menial service, he just showered so much mercy on King Pratapaudra that later King Pratapaudra was one of the only, there were few, but there was very small amount of devotees who could see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expanding in the different group and seeing Mahaprabhu dancing in all the kirtan groups simultaneously. So whenever we have this opportunity, however advanced we are in devotional life, whenever we have this possibility to come into this menial service, to do insignificant service, and to somehow give up our ego, our prestige, our what we think we are so good, just to give up that and be happy to do menial service, then so much mercy is flowing toward our direction. Don't hesitate to take the broom. Don't hesitate to do menial service. That's so much mercy is waiting there for us. A little further in Srimad Bhagavatam, we will have a very interesting verse. That's the 7th chapter, verse 30, where it will be written how to become free from bodily identification. And the answer is through respect and through surrender. So here we come back to the wing of surrender. That was what was advised by Lord Brahma to all the demigods, all the sages, to go to Lord Shiva and to try to surrender unto him. So here, this case of surrender, it's happening when there is a conflict. When there is a conflict happening, as long as no one decides to surrender, the conflict will always be there. Only when one of the party thinks, okay, he's too foolish, these things, I surrender. Only at that time, the conflict can stop. We remember how King Parikshit found Kali, who was actually killing the bull. And when Maharaj Parikshit saw that, he just took the sword and was ready to just kill Kali. And Kali just surrendered, just came at the feet of Maharaj Parikshit and said, "That's my nature, what can I do? Please give me a place where I can live." And just because of that surrender, Kali was not killed. So as soon as there is a conflict, as soon as one of the party decide to surrender, then the conflict can be solved. Then things are going on again. Now, if we take another context, this attitude of being surrender is very much connected to our Krishna consciousness. It is actually said that surrender, it's the life, the soul of bhakti. That's something we hear a lot, and can be very well connected to instructions, to guidance, to the process of Krishna consciousness. There was also a story in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam with Maharaj Priyavrata. He was ready to go to the forest and just serve the Lord through sadhana, through bhajan. But right before he could escape to the forest, Lord Brahma came to him and said, "Hey, Prabhu, I have a service for you. Why don't you come? Why don't you become the master of the universe?" Big difference, going to the forest or becoming the master of the universe. So Lord Brahma came to him with responsibilities. Who like to take responsibilities? It's very rare, even in our movement, it's very rare that devotees really decide, okay, I take responsibilities. But because Lord Brahma was like the medium of Lord Krishna, King Priyavrata accepted. And there is a very beautiful verse that comes in the fifth canto, first chapter, verse 15. And the verse says that actually we should accept whatever is coming to us, whatever is given to us by our karma, by the gunas. In that situation, that was a service that came to King Priyavrata. So we should accept all those and allow ourselves to be guided by the Lord. And here is, I think, a beautiful analogy, because it is said we should allow ourselves to be guided by the Lord like a blind man who will allow to be guided by someone who sees. I think that's a very beautiful analogy of surrender. Like we are blind. We don't know much. But we trust in our spiritual master. We trust in the Vaishnava. And whatever they will ask us, we follow them and we will try to serve them. We will try to fulfill their desires. Because they represent Krishna. What is obviously the most difficult to surrender is our concepts. Our concepts of what is right, what is wrong. There is this pastime of Lord Chaitanya, which is a very mysterious pastime. When once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nima Pandit, asked his mother, please bring me some flowers, some incense. I want to go to the Ganges and worship Mother Ganga. So Mother Sachi said, okay, just wait a minute. I don't have them right here. I have to go to the market and buy them. Just wait. I have just got 2 minutes. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya became very furious and started to demolish the whole house. He took a stick and was breaking down everything in the house. And when everything was broken, he just went out of the house and was just beating the floor until he just like fell unconscious on the floor. And when he woke up, Mother Sachi was there and she said, my dear son, here are the flowers, the incense, please now go and worship Ganga. Now how can we understand such a pastime? That's far out. That's really difficult to understand. Now Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati gave a very interesting explanation in that pastime. He's saying that actually the Lord Chaitanya was beating into our concepts of what is right and what is wrong. So often, although we hear the philosophy, although we know so many things, we have so much concept of what is right and what is wrong. And often we try to impose them also on others. And often they are mixed. They are not clear. They are not exactly the truth. Or they are not placed in the proper context. And there we can learn to surrender. There we can learn to not immediately come with our viewpoints, saying, that's the best, that's the right, I know it, I have experience in it. But to hear what the other say, to hear if the other is actually right and righter than us. Sometimes Satchitananda Swami would say, do you prefer to be right or do you want the mercy? You can choose. Yeah, so many times things are different from different perspectives and we just come and try to impose our insignificant knowledge on the point. There was a very interesting example. We were in Zagreb with Satchitananda Swami and maybe you have heard last year Maharaj went on a tour with Krishna Das, the famous singer. And he actually became friend with Krishna Das to somehow bring him to Krishna, closer to the devotees, and somehow to profit of his well-known position for the devotees to be also recognized on the Kirtan scene. And actually it worked. After the tour, the devotees were invited to give more Kirtan evening, and that's something that is going on in Zagreb on a regular basis. Now there is one Bhakta who is organizing that. And one day, I was speaking with Maharaj about the organization, how was the organization, and Maharaj said, oh, I would prefer to do it like this or like that. And then he said, no. It doesn't make much difference. Let the Bhakta who organized be right, be in the way he wanted. Because all the time, everybody will have a different opinion. But because this devotee, that's his service, and he's giving his best into it, and it doesn't make such a big difference to change it a little bit different, let him do like he thinks is the best. Of course, if it's a big catastrophe or a big, big mistake, we have to correct. But that means that it's good to allow a devotee who has a responsibility to do it the way he thinks is best. We can advise them 2 times, but it's wrong to all the time go and say, you should do like this, you should do like that. In that case, better you take the responsibility. But sometimes devotees do not like, or people do not want to take the responsibility and then take the position of the best advisor. That's interesting area. Also a big impediment for us to surrender. I mean, that's directly connected to the false ego, but it's our rebellious nature. Even if everything is right, we think, doesn't fit to me, or it's not applied to me, or it's, I do differently, that's not for me. This rebellious nature, and that's deep inside of our heart. And all, Srila Prabhupada mentioned, I found that also in my reading on Bhagavatam, that all struggles that we encounter in this material world are just due to this rebellious nature. As soon as we come to the surrender level, then there is no struggle anymore. Then everything becomes very easy. But that's not easy. There is a verse saying that it is easier to do very strict fast, very severe austerity. It is easier to do that than to follow the words of the Vaishnavas. When we are with Vaishnavas and they are advising us, there is the test on our ego. There is the test how much we want to surrender. And I mean, surrender is something progressive. More and more we are called to surrender. More and more, actually, our surrender has to go deeper. And Krishna will help us in that by sending tests. When tests are given to us in spiritual life, it's always an opportunity to surrender deeper and deeper. Now how? How will we do that? How will we surrender? How will we surrender our desire for enjoyment, our desire for prestige? Because that's in opposition of surrender. Why we don't want to surrender? Because we lose some self-interest somewhere next aside. Therefore we don't want to surrender because we want to protect our self-interest. So to come there, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave us six processes. I think you are all quite familiar with those six processes of Sharanagati. And I think we can see them also in two branches. One is the most, I would say, at least from my perspective, the most important, is to come into level of humility. Only when we understand that we are helpless, only when we understand that we are weak, that we need help, can we surrender. As long as the ego is there and we are proud and we think, I know better, I can make it, there is no real surrender. The surrender can happen only when humility is the foreground. Bhujan Prabhu made that point very nicely this year in the Govardhan retreat. He was explaining how Rupa Goswami was introduced to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How Rupa Goswami was introduced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to all the Vaishnavas. So Mahaprabhu would say, here is Rupa Goswami, please bless him. Here is Rupa Goswami for you, please bless him. And to all the Vaishnavas. And Rupa Goswami was getting blessings and blessings over and over by all the Vaishnavas. Now Bhujan Prabhu mentioned, how much are we actually eager to get blessings from the Vaishnavas? How much are we thinking to put ourselves in the proper position to get the blessings of the Vaishnavas? And then he said, only when one is humble can he put himself there. As long as one is proud, he thinks, why, I don't need blessings, I can do on my own. It's the same for prayer. Only when we come to a level of humility can we pray. As long as we think we can manage everything, why should we pray? Even if we pray, there is no real heart. The prayer or the prayer should be done from this mood of humility, of this mood, I need help, I'm helpless. So also for surrendering, we have to come to that level of humility. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned self-dedication as a branch to surrender. And that self-dedication is, let me do everything I can to please Krishna. I will engage myself fully just to please Krishna. That's self-dedication. And something also that is very easily reachable from us is to accept whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject whatever is not favorable. We have heard so many times what is favorable or not for our Krishna consciousness. So it's easily at our reach to discriminate and to follow that, to really accept what is favorable or unfavorable. You can, all of you, explore in your Krishna consciousness what maybe is not favorable for Krishna consciousness that you are still doing. For example, I see for myself, I know that it's not favorable to speak about others or to speak things that doesn't make sense. But I'm still doing, I know there I have to work. So all of you, please think in this favorable, unfavorable, what is very nice that you are doing in the favorable and what is maybe to be connected into the unfavorable. That's directly here, that's completely practical. That's there. Sometimes you think, oh, so much philosophy, how can I relate with my... But this is completely at our stage. That's very easy to grab. And then we come to another category. And I will call that the category of faith. Only can we surrender when we have faith to the person we surrender, or we have faith into the instruction from which we surrender. And this faith is symbolized into understanding that Krishna will protect us and understanding that Krishna will maintain us. There is no need to worry in any case. Krishna is there. When this faith is there, one can surrender. We did once, Poonachandra Prabhu once made a workshop on surrender in a Serbian camp. There was an exercise when one devotee would put himself in your back and you would open your arms and let yourself fall in the back and the devotee will grab you. So you would surrender and you would, it was difficult, you did not know if he maybe he would miss you or if he would really grasp you. But just to let yourself fall in the back, it's actually what we do when we surrender, when we have faith that our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, Krishna, is really wanting the best for us, although we might not understand all the time how they are teaching us. But if we have just this faith, whatever they want for us is the best, then we can let ourselves, then we can surrender to what they are telling us. Once a devotee asked that question to Sachinandana Swami, how will I be able to surrender? And he gave the answer, he said, we need courage to surrender. It's not easy to surrender. But personally, I get the strength to surrender into the chanting of the Holy Name. When I have a good chanting of the Holy Name, then it's much easier for me to surrender to any situation. But if I cannot get strength from the Holy Name, then it becomes very difficult. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, don't worry, Prabhus, it's very easy to surrender. Because it is the nature of the soul. So many prayers we hear of the devotees saying, my dear Lord, I belong to you. Everything I have, everything I possess is belonging to you. That's surrender. I belong to you. I am yours. I am yours, Krishna. And that's actually the bondage between the jiva and Krishna. Sachinandana Swami spoke maybe for half a year on this principle of sambandha, this principle of bondage of the jiva with Krishna. So many times he was also saying, we can practice so much sadhana, but if you are not in this sambandha, in this bondage with Krishna, it's also not much result. When the Samantha is there, there is much more result. And then he gave the example, often I put my microphone here to record, and I put some tesa film or scotch tape around to. So he said, look, those two microphones, they are experiencing Samantha. They are bound together. And this scotch tape around, this is this feeling, my dear Lord, I am yours. I belong to you. And that's surrender. That's do whatever you want. I have full faith. Whatever comes is coming from you. I now just surrender. The last things I would like to say is surrender in connection to our spiritual practices. Until now, the surrender was more into behavior, into following instruction. But how do we surrender while chanting the holy name? How do we surrender while practicing Vajrayana? One great saint was saying that, actually I could real chanting is not possible without complete surrender and total dependence on the Lord. Only then can we experience calmness of the mind. A mind disturbed by worldly anxieties will never be able to fix. So when we chant, we are so much planning, so much trying to think, how will I do this, how will I do that. But if we have faith that actually everything will be taken care of by the Lord, if we have faith that in any case we will be protected, we will be maintained, then we can chant without anxiety. Then the mind can be called very peaceful by this surrender and total dependency on the Lord. Then the mind can become very peaceful. During this time when I was in India, I was like a beginner sadhaka trying to chant the holy name. I went through a difficult time. And one day I got a phone call from Satchinandana Swami, who was in Jagannath Puri. I was in Vrindavan. And he said, "So Gaurahari, how is your bhajan going on?" And actually he could feel that I was in a struggle. Therefore he called me. And then he said, "Now you have to come to another understanding. Forget all tips. Forget all techniques. And just enter into an attitude of surrendering while you are chanting. Just work on that." And it brought such a difference in my chanting. To surrender all my plans, all my goal, all my concept, all my mental stuff. Then I just surrender everything to you. I know I have faith in my dear Krishna. You will take care of that. And the Brajpasis, they are giving us the example of full trust in Krishna. They know Krishna will protect them. They have no doubt. Whatever happened, they are always calling for Krishna. After the Kaliya pastime, after Krishna danced so beautifully on all those hoods, the Brajbasi were coming from one extreme of emotion to another extreme of emotion. First they were heartbroken to see how Kaliya was almost killing Krishna. They were suffering hell. And suddenly Krishna started to dance on the head of Kaliya. And suddenly they experienced such peace, such happiness to see how Krishna was dancing. Sometimes we can ask, but why did Krishna stay so long time in the coils of the serpent? And for so long time the Brajvasi were in that agony. And Kali Kanapu gave a very beautiful answer. He said that first of all Krishna wanted to see how much love the Brajvasi had for him. And second of all, he wanted to wait that everyone was there. And only then he would do his dance on the head of Kaliya. So after Krishna had finished to dance on Kaliya's hood, Kaliya went away, he was banished from the Yamuna, and all the Brajvasis came to Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj embraced him. The Gopa were also coming to embrace him. The gopis were around just staring at him. And the cows came very close to Krishna, and they were just also staring at him, and they had tears. Cow had tears. And when the cows smelled the fragrance of Krishna's body, they just could not check themselves, and they were just licking Krishna's body from toe to head. Now, it was a little late, so Nanda Maharaj said, okay, let's sleep in the forest this night. It's too late to go back to the village. Today we do camping. We stay in the forest. And all the Brajvasis say, Hari Bol, wonderful, let's do evening in the forest. And that's exciting. So Nanda Maharaj decided to have a protection plan. So he said, Krishna will be in the center. Then we will have all the women and children around them. Then we will have another cycle with all the gopas. Then another cycle with all the cows. And another cycle with soldiers. I mean, the kshatriya of our Brajvasi kshatriya protecting everything. So the night slowly came. And everyone was just looking at Krishna, and they could not sleep. Half of the night, they were just all the time speaking about how Krishna had danced, and do you remember how he did that time, this time? They were all the time absorbed and speaking about Krishna. And actually, that's what the habitants of the spiritual world are doing all the time. They are all the time speaking about Krishna. So, also for us, the day we will be in the spiritual world, we will also only speak about Krishna. There will be nothing else to speak about. So, after some time, the Brajvasi could finally fall asleep. Only the gopis were still awake. And they were looking at the beauty of Krishna, that was the form of Krishna that was illuminated by the ray of the moon. But finally, everyone fell asleep. And suddenly, there was an alarm sound. A big catastrophe was happening. Everyone woke up in fear. What's happening? They could hear a big noise in a little far away. So they started to speculate. Maybe it's Kaliya who is coming back to take revenge. Maybe it's a herd of elephants running toward us and ready to walk on us. What is happening? What is happening? And suddenly they saw a red light all around. Understood it's a forest fire. So they called immediately, they understood Krishna can protect us. Nanda Maharaj understood, remember all the words of Garga Muni, yes, Krishna is our only chance. Please Krishna, save us, save us. They all came to Krishna. The fire was coming at a tremendous speed toward them. Krishna said, don't worry, I will protect you. The beasts of the forest were running all around. The leaves were cracking. The wood burning was cracking very loudly. The flames were licking the sky. And Krishna said, don't worry, don't worry. Just close your eyes. What a surrender, huh? In such a situation, to just close your eyes. But they had faith in Krishna. They just closed their eyes, and Krishna took all the forest fire into his breathing, and everything disappeared. And with the soft glance of Krishna, Krishna renew all the trees. All the forest was looking like nothing had happened. But the Brajvasi opened their eyes. They could not believe. They were saying, was it just a dream? Was it a magician trick? What was it? It was like a flash. But they just knew Krishna had again protected them. And they were again fully absorbed in love with Krishna. So I will end here. Hope it's 10 past 9. I hope I was not too over time. Do we have time to take maybe one or two questions or comments? Or That's very, very large topic. I mean, surrender, false ego. I tried somehow to keep simple and practical. And yeah, if you have questions, comments, okay. Let's take first the Brahmana, Govinda.
The question is because we sometimes said we shouldn't surrender our intelligence and we shouldn't follow blindly. So how to connect this with because one example you gave would be that we should as a blind man just trust.
Mm-hmm.
So how to connect this to this?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. We have never to surrender our intelligence. I mean, surrender means to give up somehow. So our intelligence should always be working, and we should always still discriminate. Discriminate when something is wrong, we have to tell it. We should not just surrender to something wrong. And so we have to use our discrimination to. But we should, when we do that discrimination, we can see already half of the things we would not accept, we understand actually they do not make much difference. I can leave the things how they are. I don't have to complain for this or for that. I can let it as it is. So we have to discriminate. Discrimination must be there. And often, I mean, the best of the rules is to confirm with other Vaishnavas. For example, if we receive an instruction that seems to be completely in opposite, and it's just coming by our temple president, so we might ask other Vaishnava, what do you think? You feel it's all right? And then we can also confirm again with the temple president. Or temple president is something small, but with the guru. That's sometimes guru can give instruction that you feel, it doesn't fit to me at all. So it's good to discriminate and it's good to speak about it, to ask other Vaishnavas. Srila Prabhupada will say, when there are doubts, we can ask 7 Brahmanas. You go to 7 Brahmanas and you ask to all of them and you see how many answer come from that side, how many that side, and then you get a clearer vision. I personally, when it's instruction coming from the spiritual master, I would say even though the instruction might seem to be not applicable for me, I will try. And after try, if it doesn't work, I will approach him again, clarify and explain, okay, I did try so far and it did not work, and should I continue in that way or should we readjust? So we have to discuss those issues. But often I realized how the mercy of Krishna, of the mercy of Guru, can make things that you think are not possible possible. And how actually you can be so much empowered just by surrendering to the instruction. But we have to discriminate, we never have to give up our intelligence. Our intelligence should always be working, and we should ask devotee, confirm with other Vaishnavas, confirm with the Guru, so to be sure that we are on the right track. You have a question, huh? I think it works. Because often, like I was saying, we need humility to surrender. So often when we are proud, it's almost not possible to connect with Krishna. So Krishna is to send something that will bring us humble. And then, at that time we can surrender, at that time we can pray, at that time we can take shelter, and at that time Krishna can come again and reveal himself. But if we think everything is cheap, I am in full control, it usually doesn't work. So often Krishna arranged situation to make us humble, so that we can be in the proper tuning. I am just a servant. I want to serve my Lord, and then it can work. Now to comparison, yeah, I think it's okay. I think you can see you can compare that with Krishna waiting to see the love, to see how much love was expressed. I think it's not a rasabhas or not a contradiction. I think it's okay.
Just want to thank you for a nice class, because it was very inspiring to surrender. And you see how big this topic is and how much we have to work on ourselves, and how nice we are with these different steps, different qualities you have to develop to really more surrender, and then how it attracts Krishna's mercy. And then we can see, as you said, also on Sankirtan, the Krishna manifests, and the bridge passes, so wonderful Krishna dances. And so it was very inspiring.
Yeah, also for book distribution it needs a big surrender. I see for myself, I will try today to surrender for a few hours into book distribution, but it's not an easy thing for me to do. That's an effort to go and surrender. But when we do that, it's really good. It's really there Krishna wants us to go to that surrender. That's the soul of bhakti, surrender. That's we have to somehow or other get our way into that attitude. And then it's easy. Then it's that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said it's the quality of the soul to surrender. It's our nature. It's easy. It's not a big difficult thing. Anything else?
So surrender means more or less to do what Krishna wants.
Yeah.
In simple words, we just have to give up all our ideas.
Yeah.
Just do what Krishna wants.
Yeah.
Prabhupada said, "Charlie Chaplin said a little bit." Charlie Chaplin.
Uh huh.
You're like moving on Charlie Chaplin.
And he was quoting that as an example of surrender.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Charlie Chaplin. Every position, every situation he surrendered.
Ha ha ha, yeah. Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Garantara, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Srimad Gaur Bhaktavinda ki, Srimad Nitai Gaur Premadhi.